Welcome to episode 189 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with Paul Rogers about the origins of Liverpool FC Digital and his strategy pivot at AS Roma.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who is running out of wall space for Sports Geek jerseys, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, the Sports Geek office is getting quite full with Sports Geek jerseys. I look forward to visiting my guest on today's pod, Paul Rogers, in AS Roma, at AS Roma, and to add another Sports Geek jersey to the collection. For those of you who don't know, the Sports Geek jerseys represent visits and Sports Geek trips. So when I go and visit a team, I like to make sure that it is signified by a jersey. So it's absolutely awesome and completely humbling that my office is filled with colour from jerseys from around the world. So this episode, I was lucky enough to catch up with Paul Rogers. We met on this little thing called the internet many years ago when Paul was working at Liverpool. And as we discussed, we sort of discussed the early days of the internet and what it was like at Liverpool when things got started. And then luckily enough, we finally met in real life. And as you've heard me discuss before, I love catching up with people that I've met on the internet. It's how I've built Sports Geek as a business. So we were lucky enough to connect in Sydney at BOSS, otherwise known as the Business of Sport Summit. Paul was one of the main keynotes, and I really enjoyed his keynote. And we got to discuss it. We snuck off to record a podcast, I think just before lunch. Now, hopefully James, my tremendous podcast editor, can work his magic, because Paul and I had some technical difficulties with batteries failing and the like. So I'm hoping that this actually makes its way into a podcast, because if it doesn't, it didn't work and no one's listening to this, which is a little bit, if you record a podcast and it doesn't work, did it really happen? So I'm hoping that it did happen. And so this is my chat with Paul Rogers from AS Roma. Very happy to be here in Sydney. Lucky enough to meet this man in person here for BOSS, Business of Sports Summit in Sydney. Known each other online, and it's good to put a face to the name. Paul Rogers from AS Roma, welcome to Sports Geek.
Thank you for having me. Great to finally meet up after a good few years.
Yes. So one, really enjoyed your presentation here at BOSS. But before we get into that and some of the lessons and takeaways from that, I just want to get a bit of your backstory for people who don't know. You know, before AS Roma, you were at Liverpool. And I want to know a bit more about, I guess, your background, because it's all the whole sports internet and digital space. Like, I come at it from a geek background, but you came from a journalist's background. You want to give people a little bit of an understanding of your background?
Yeah, sure. I was a music journalist. I was a music fan as a kid and a football fan, and I went down the music route. Hip hop was my thing when I was a kid. And I used to go to concerts, write reviews, send them off to magazines, and then ended up sort of getting into that sort of space, interviewing lots of sort of music bands and not just hip hop.
What was your most memorable hip hop artist that you interviewed?
I interviewed most of them around the sort of time of sort of early 90s.
Yep.
You know, I went on tour with Public Enemy, went on tour with Ice-T. Yeah, I did. It was good fun. And I was a kid. And, yeah. And like, you know, they found it quite funny that there was this like teenage kid from England, you know, on tour of these big American like political rap groups. So yeah. It was good fun. And then I went to college. I was in the north of England. I was going to Liverpool games all the time. I was a season ticket holder there. And I ended up moving into sort of football journalism, magazine stuff. Went to GQ, and then I started working for an internet company, and that was like around the sort of dot-com boom.
Yeah, so you're in the print industry, and yeah. Seeing how that's evolving and sort of struggle, awkward giraffe style, trying to figure out where digital fits. And then you started doing the football journalism piece again in the magazine stuff, but then getting some grounding in what was the internet, that, you know, early.com and, you know, all of these businesses and startups that were trying to figure out. But it must have been tough because the infrastructure wasn't there. You know, for the people who listen to the podcast that can remember the dial-up sound of getting on the internet, must have been tough in that early piece where we don't have that always on nature that the internet is now.
Yeah, it was crazy, really. I didn't know anything about the internet. I didn't have an email account or anything, and I started working for an internet startup. But it was content, really. It was content. We were publishing content as soon as you could learn how to publish, and it was fine. But it was much more communal. It was like pre-social media for me.
It was like messaging boards and forums and that kind of stuff.
And it was all about community. And it's funny that, you know, we talk about all that sort of stuff now, but that's exactly what it was then. And you had this sort of hardcore of people who are in your community, and you would sort of know them, or they would have personalities around it, even if you didn't know them personally. But it was all about community. And, like, you know, I think we lost a lot of that, you know, and maybe we'll come back to it. But I think we went from the internet being about community and communicating with different people to becoming a broadcast tool.
Yep.
And we sort of lost track. And I think the internet and what we call digital space sort of started to echo what television is and what radio is, which is just a broadcast tool. And I think Facebook went down that route. You know, all of us fell into it. And I think we changed, but it's interesting that at the beginning it was about communicating with someone else who you didn't know across the world, and hopefully we're trying to get back to that thing.
So how did you get from the internet startup into the role at Liverpool? Again, around 2000, 2001 is when you started at Liverpool?
Yeah, so at that time there was people throwing money around the internet all over the place.
Yeah.
And there was an offer to buy out the company or certainly invest in the company, and the owners decided that they were going to stay with it and they weren't going to do that, which I think they would regret later down the line. Around the same time, Granada, which is ITV in England, basically bought the digital rights, or 50% of digital rights to Liverpool Football Club. It was valued at about 20 million at that time. It was when everyone was just, and they also bought it to Arsenal.
It was a bit of the Wild West when, you know, it was like, here's the TV deals. They're all locked up. Oh, this new thing, the internet.
Yeah.
And there was that media players and that going in, and this again, which is still happening, you know, all these years later. But yeah, it was a bit of unknown. And so there was a bit of that was happening both here in Australia and also in, you know, in the US.
Yeah. And we sort of went down we went big on video from, I started in January 2001, and we went big on video. We called it LiverpoolFC.tv. We had a video subscription service from 2001. We had internet radio or live commentary, which was behind a paywall. You know, so we went all in, and the audience weren't there because the broadband wasn't there. We didn't really know what we were doing internationally. We licensed off a website to China. It was just a translation of what we did. It failed, you know, and we kept making all these mistakes. But I think the thing there was, anything we did was new.
Yeah.
And there was no real competition, you know. And now I think that, like, the likes of Amazon and Netflix and, you know, people have a different understanding of it, and the expectations are high. Like, but football clubs back then, it was like you were a football club on the internet, as opposed to now you are just a brand on the internet.
Yeah. But also in that early space, you're both educating the market on, hey, these are the products. It's not like now, you know, I think we just had a stat there that 33% of people in Australia now go to OTT as their first destination, not traditional TV. Like, but back then it was TV is on the tube and we're not looking at other places. So when you're the first mover in a market, like, hey, we're doing live streaming or we're doing video on the internet, when completely forgetting that the infrastructure was not ready for it, it must have been tough in that space because the fans might have wanted it, but they didn't even understand the concept.
Yeah, and I suppose we had a different... Do you know what? I think there's a legacy to what we were doing. Like, we were saying, okay, you couldn't watch every game. There's loads more games now shown on TV than there ever was back then. There's obviously loads more content than there ever was back then. But we had things like, okay, so we've got a press conference of our coach will do a press conference. And it'll go on for 20 minutes and the TV would take a minute.
Yep.
You know, and one of the things we were saying was, you know, you can watch the full press conference, you can hear everything. We would give you every bit of content because, you know, back then it was like the newspaper takes a few quotes, take them out of context, you know, the television show a bit, you know, the highlights of a game,
yep.
it won't show that much. So it was all about, we'll show you everything. And I think the problem, I think the problem that we've actually had is we continued to do that up until recently. In fact, we were like, we're giving you everything, when actually now we need to cut a thing shorter. We need to, there's so much content out there. People want it curated a lot more than they want the full works. Like, you can listen to a press conference for 20 minutes, but it's probably not worth 20 minutes of your time.
Yeah.
You know, only certain sections are. And I think the newspapers and television channels haven't been getting this stuff wrong.
Yeah.
So,
you know, from that early point, early 2000s to, you know, then you've gone through that initial, hey, bedding down our website, this is how we're driving our fans. And then you get the, you know, and you're getting your content team that's, you know, writing match reports and doing video and that kind of things. And then you get the curveball of social media that hits 2007, 8, 9, 10 as, you know, every year a new platform comes at you. What was that period like for you at Liverpool?
Just to go through, so 2001 we launched a website, and then it was basically website and SMS.
Yep.
So we had subscription services for SMS type things. I remember being at the Champions League final in Istanbul in 2005, and we were stressed out, and the game was like stressful, and we had to file a match report online at this time, and we were in Istanbul, and we had to try and get dial up, you know, and we were doing all this sort of stuff. And we thought it was really hard, but there was no YouTube, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no Instagram story, Snapchat.
Yeah.
There was none of this. We didn't have any international media, and we thought we were stressed out then.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you see how quickly the world changes. I think YouTube 2006 maybe.
Yeah.
But you know, it was completely, the world just changed incredibly. We sort of actually launched television in 2004. And I was doing, like, I had to learn TV and was doing an international television program for 3 hours every week, which would go out around the world.
Yep.
2007, we launched a television channel, like a 7 day a week thing. So I was like, I sort of moved from just being website and digital to like head of content.
Yep.
And then 2008, I think it was about 2008, social media come in.
Yep.
And this is out, it was the best time. It was probably the best time ever. This is what used to happen. I was sort of like always interested in that sort of stuff. Basically, you'd say, oh, there's something called Twitter. Okay, this is what we did. And this is God's honest truth, what we did. Sign up personally in the morning. Go, how does this work? What do you even do here? Do it. Say, right, by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we'll launch Liverpool Football Club's account.
Yep.
We would just basically sign up for Instagram. There's this thing called Instagram pictures. You share pictures, you can do some sort of tint on it.
Yep.
Right, in the morning we'll do that, try and work it out, mess around. In the afternoon we'll quickly launch. It was like a race.
It was a bit of an arms race, because it was a little bit of, you know.
We were certainly one of the first. Because we were so quick with that stuff. And we didn't even know what we were doing. And there was something funny that Twitter or something released recently where it looked at people's football club's first ever tweets. And I think it was like, Liverpool's was like one of the girls there, very close to me, a girl called Nina, said, I'm looking for a cameraman to film some interview this afternoon. And that was the first tweet by Liverpool Football Club.
Yep.
And now they have like 10 million followers. It's like, it's funny. It was totally amateurish. It was really exciting. We were just brave, you know, and it definitely was. It was just like, who can be there first? And you know, sometimes we weren't winning the league at that time or anything, but we were like winning this sort of digital race, I'd say.
And so it was just a matter of going, well, we're going to test this out, you know, see how our fans react to it.
Yeah.
And again, going back to your, you know, point about the internet, that early time, again, it was like the community, like you were, you know, you'd post something and you'd be responding because the audience was getting, you know, was still relatively small but growing, and you had that community feel. How did you go from like, you roll it out and you're starting to put your content and you're testing what's working to then this audience and the numbers just skyrocket, as, you know, there was a few levers that were changed, you know, that were pulled around, you know, what happening was with Twitter and that caused growth, and then, you know, Facebook with pages and stuff like that really caused a big spike. How did you go through that like exceptional growth period that a lot of the clubs went through?
I think it was like, obviously that was just like everyone was just getting on it, and like, at the same time football clubs were getting on it, the general public was getting on it. So like, and then it made sense, and then people started following different, you'd follow more than one club. It was a different audience. You know, I always knew, it was a, it was a little bit sort of problematic that you knew that you're building this on someone else's platform.
Yeah.
And I always knew that. And we had this sort of website competing with it. So you own the website, it's what you know. Those metrics are probably better for you. People are selling onto that platform. And we were traditional journalists,
yep,
you know, metamorphizing into social media people. But, you know, I always knew, like, let's not go all in on social media. And Arsenal, I remember Arsenal went all in on, and Arsenal and Liverpool used to share stats and on website stats.
Yep.
We were quite close in terms of that. And we always had like higher website traffic than them. But then they all went in on social media a lot heavier than Liverpool sort of did. And then their website traffic went right down.
Yep.
But their social media traffic went up and
yep.
their social media followers went up. And we would look at it and sort of like, you know, is it the right thing to do? Is it the wrong thing? And I don't think there was any right or wrong. I think time's proved, you know, not that you would ever change what you did, but that, you know, it was the risk that we knew there was a risk. We knew that Facebook at any point could just change the, you know, I always thought it wouldn't be so much they would cut reach or organic or the algorithms. I actually thought at some point they could charge.
Yeah.
They could charge by followers.
Yeah.
You know, they could say to the big brands, hang on, why are we doing this? It's like the Yellow Pages or something.
Potentially.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and I always thought that could happen. So it was sort of like, it was sort of arm's length a bit. We were like first on, but it wasn't like, let's give them everything.
Yeah.
You know, we've still got to keep a website afloat and stuff. I think the big game changer for us, Liverpool, was I was looking at some metrics around our website, and our website traffic would have been, if I looked at the top 10 countries, it was, I think, 7 or 8 of the top 10 countries on Liverpool's website in terms of traffic were English speaking.
Yep.
So it would have been, it actually was the UK, Ireland, USA, Australia, Malaysia, Singapore, you know, and maybe Denmark or somewhere would have been in there, or Norway certainly would have been in there. But generally, English speaking countries. When I started to look at Facebook in great detail, our number one country was the UK. And then it was Indonesia, then it was Thailand, then it was Malaysia. India would have been somewhere in there. But basically, Mexico, Colombia. Basically, I worked out something like 7 or 8 of the top 10 countries on Facebook for Liverpool were foreign language.
Yep.
But on the website, it was all English.
Yep.
So I thought, well, instead of just launching new websites in all these languages, everyone's on social media, why don't we launch international local language social media and do it localized rather than translation?
Yep.
And that was the key thing.
And so that's when you did that split of setting up regional-based social media, produce content for that market in that language, in that tone. And so it was a different, you know, a different approach, but that's what worked and connected with those markets.
Like we were quick to set up social media accounts for the club. When we decided to go down the international route, we were basically very quick again with that. We knew there was an audience because the audience was there on Facebook following the club. They just weren't consuming the content because they couldn't understand it. So we had to localize content. And generally, it was about language.
Yep.
The language was a barrier. In some cases, like when we did with India, it was about just more about localization. It was more about personalizing and giving a different sort of feel to those fans.
And then that did that feed into, you know, the international tours and that kind of stuff? Because, you know, if you're saying, hey, we're going to tour in this part of the world, you go put that on the standard Liverpool channels, they become more and more cluttered. And so it gave you a little bit of that segmentation. You know, people in London don't want to really know a lot about the Australian tour, but everyone in Australia wants to know everything about it. And did it give you a bit of, I guess, a bit of flexibility?
Yeah, I think the fans want to know everything that's happening about the club. But what it meant was that we could actually just deliver content in a potentially different way. If it's a language issue, then we're obviously we're breaking down a barrier of language.
Yep.
But one thing we were finding with Australia was, you know, even though it's English language, we were posting at the wrong time.
Yep.
So, you know, and it was a very different experience for those fans to be able to get content at their time. And you can just schedule the content.
And again, this is, you know, we're not just talking Facebook specifically because it's, you know, some have algorithms and it would still pop up. But if you're posting at 4 a.m. in the morning and your fans aren't seeing it, like it's a big thing.
And the other thing is, like, it's about sort of having a bit more respect for your fans. So if you're going to say, hey, come to, we got one of our players going down to the club store to sign shirts or sign a new book, or we're saying there's some tickets left for tonight's game or anything like that, then there's no point saying that to a fan in Jakarta or a fan in Sydney or Melbourne.
Yep.
You know, so it's about different messages for that sort of audience. Also, like, sometimes, you know, the level of depth of content that you're delivering to fans, maybe not every fan wants that, that yep. sort of the history stuff.
Yep.
Maybe you're delivering a slightly different message.
So that takes you, I mean, you take through that social media piece. You leave Liverpool 2015
yep.
to take up the role at AS Roma. You know, just take us through one, I guess, those first couple of days of leaving, you know, the giant that is Liverpool to go to AS Roma, and I guess some of the differences and what you saw when you first came into AS Roma.
It was quite an emotional moment when I left Liverpool. I'd been there a long time. Obviously, I was a Liverpool fan, but I was excited by what Roma were doing. I met Jim Pilotta, the owner. He's one of the owners, one of the biggest owners of Boston Celtics as well.
Yep.
I met him a couple of times. I met some people from Roma. I was excited by, like, they were on a beginning of a journey. It'd only been like a couple of years since he'd taken over the club. And when he came in, they had to make a lot of changes to the club. And digital was something that they knew they really wanted to do. Jim was really into technology, into media, and sort of that sort of like entertainment media technology triangle.
Yep.
So I was really excited by what they sort of wanted to do.
Because it has all that upside,
yeah.
But it's not a startup. Like, it's got all this history.
Jim talks about it as like a 90-year-old startup. So it does feel like a startup at times, you know. And there was a lot of stuff to do. There was a lot of work to do. But there was sort of a blank slate to go in and, you know, work with people. And also the biggest thing was we had the backing of the owner. Like, usually you're pushing up in these sort of industries, in these sort of organizations, you push up and you have to try and convince people to do stuff. We're actually getting like pushed from the above. We're saying, why are we not doing that? Why are we not doing that?
And that's so important to, you know, because again, everyone, there's a lot of people listening, you know, nodding their head saying, you know, they're always pitching up and saying, hey, we need to do this. But when it's come top down, it completely changes, I guess, the landscape for you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's difficult at times as well because, I mean, Jim was seeing lots of investment. So he invests as well in tech startups and, you know, and he's constantly surrounded by this sort of tech space, MIT, all that sort of stuff. So there's always this stuff coming at you, you know, and it's hard, you know, it's hard to keep up, but it's a better situation to be pushed to, like, to be more sort of advanced in, you know, in terms of technology and innovation. And also, like, there's a culture, I think, particularly from Jim, driven by Jim, is experiment. You know, if you make mistakes, you make mistakes. You know, if you fail at some things, you fail at some things. But what we're not going to do is just basically be the same as everyone else. I mean, that was the biggest thing. Like, you have these other football clubs, you know, more successful than Roma, bigger fan bases than Roma, you know, and if you just do what they do, then you stay, the gap stays the same.
Yep.
It was like, well, we have to be different. We have to be a bit more innovative. We have to, you know, have a different personality.
So that does lead me into, you know, your presentation at Boss, and, you know, I loved it, and especially the way that you delivered it by opening, saying, you know, this is what we're doing at AS Roma, but here's the things we got wrong, and here's the things that we, you know, we had to look at and completely rethink what we thought was the way to do it. Where did that, I mean, you know, it wasn't just, hey, I've got to do a presentation, I've got to put some things, not ideas. Like, when did that realization start happening for you, like, inside the AS Roma team, to say, hang on, you know, we keep doing this stuff, this content, or this way, it might not be the right way? Was there a light bulb moment that sort of went off on that, on some of those things?
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's that we use the internet, we use social media, you know, we are consumers of brands.
Yep.
You know, so it almost felt like we got to this point where we're doing one thing in our day job, and then as soon as we've got any downtime, we're doing something completely different.
Yep.
You know, so as consumers or football fans or whatever, we're choosing to use the internet and digital media and social media in a different way than we are expecting the people we're communicating with to use.
Yep.
And it was just like, hang on, what are we doing here? Because we wouldn't choose to do this, you know. And so why are we delivering this type of content or this sort of attitude? You know, I think One thing I'd say about what we do is we're not right. We're not the best. You know, I don't think we've got it sussed.
Yep.
But I think we're trying to look at it more from a fan perspective. You know, and I think everyone talks about fan engagement. I mean, it's a buzzword. Everyone talks about disruption,
yep,
all those sort of things. But you know, I just always look at like the record industry and they tried to fight off streaming. And I remember when I actually started working in the internet, Napster was out,
yep,
you know, and all that sort of stuff. And the record companies didn't like it and they wanted to fight against it and the yep consumers won. And I just look at it, you know, that's how we speak. You know, if we continue to do something that suits us but doesn't suit the fan will go elsewhere. There's too much competition.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some of the stuff that you were saying yesterday, you know, in the presentation, in like that change of mindset, as much for your team and the people producing the content to go, you know, and it is easy to say, think like a fan. Think like it's a bit of a, it can just end up being a poster on a wall and it's not actually lived. But, you know, going in, talking to the fans and saying, well, this is where we're consuming our content. It's here, not where you want it to be. So there was a whole bunch of stuff that you were saying around the wanting to have control, like back to the original internet. If we sort of say V1 of the internet, before social was go to our website. And as you're saying before around social, that's what it was. Oh, social, to go to our website. But you've sort of had a flip on that to say, well, we've got to be where our fans are. This is where they want the content. How can we be relevant in those platforms? Has that sort of been the shift you've sort of done around Ace Roma?
Yeah, I think so. And you basically, you can see the stats are out there, like the data's out there, you know, and we've put maybe, you still need this human touch and you yep still need to make decisions. And I also think that fans don't always know what they want.
Yep.
You know, and if you ask them, they, you know, when you ask them about what should be on your website, they don't exactly know because they don't know other stuff that could be possible. But now everyone's using.
Yeah, we're just making sure here, like if there was a bit of a pause there, we've had all kinds of technical issues. Paul and I both then pushed the laptop that was about to sleep and turn off the recorder. So continue.
Yeah, so I think I've lost track of what I was saying, but the data's out there. The data's out there, and I still think you need the human element and editorial decisions, editorial choices.
Yep.
But what we can't do is let our ego get in the way of what we actually need to deliver. So if we spend a lot of time making a great video, or we spend a lot of time writing an article or a big interview, and we say, right, that's the most important thing today, but all our fans actually are trying to find, not looking for that, trying to find the ticket information or how do I buy tickets or what time's the kickoff, then we ultimately need to deliver what the fans need. Otherwise, we're not serving a purpose. Now, we can still deliver that content, but let's just prioritise rightly. And the stuff you see working on social media, if we constantly see something working and something not working, why we continue to push our stuff that doesn't work.
And that's the thing, again, another one was like that ego piece of, well, I've spent a lot of time on this bit of content, must be good, I better push it. And if fans don't want it, it's like, well, you need to check your ego at the door, that they don't want it. What do they want? How can we serve, like diving into like what are our audience consuming? Like you're doing a video, which videos are they watching more of? Well, we need to do more of them. Like using those analytics for that reason. And I think the other one was, you know, especially for the content producers that are listening, like if you're finding the content that you're producing boring, there's every chance that the fans are too. So really question why you're doing it.
Yes.
I love that piece from yesterday.
Yeah, totally. I mean, one thing I'd say is like on social media, so on Twitter, I'll use Twitter as an example. Obviously, Twitter introduced a thing where you could retweet your own tweet.
Yeah.
You know, it was quite a big thing. And what we were doing was let's say we were tweeting loads of stuff out, and then some stuff would be really popular and other stuff wouldn't be, and we would push the stuff that wasn't popular to try and make it popular. And like, hang on, they didn't want it first time. It wasn't just, it's not constantly they just didn't see it, they didn't want it. So now the only stuff we really retweet now is the stuff that's really working, because let's boost the stuff that people obviously like to consume, and the stuff that we want them to consume but they're choosing not to, why are we trying to force feed it on them?
It's really important. One thing I wanted to touch on, and again, you talked about it in that early internet stage in the community feel, and the fact that social sort of has gone into that broadcast, you know, and it's a scale thing. You know, you've got millions and millions of fans. How do you respond? How do you think that we can bring that community aspect back at scale in some form? Like, it's not like, because you'd like to do it, but you know, you put out a post and then there's thousands potentially of responses. So how do you bring some of that community back?
One of the problems, I think, one of the problems social media is it's very negative. Like, yep. I was reading an article the other day about how social media brings out the worst in the human race, and it's almost by design. So, you know, negative things get more interaction. Newspapers write negative stories because negative news is more popular, and it's the same for the internet. So if you take risks, you're going to get killed.
Yep.
Like, you just do. And, like, and you will be criticised. And it's you've got to look at it. Like, I always look at when we get killed on some stuff, and maybe rightly so, I always go and look at people's profiles who are saying the worst stuff. And if we're talking about from a Roma's perspective, if I'm seeing someone saying, delete your account, you know, delete this is, then I look at their profiles and see, oh, that's an AC Milan fan. That's a Juventus fan.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it will be Roma fans because everyone's not the same. But you have to just be brave. And I think, you know, sometimes I always try and think, okay, we've got some sort of vision and we've got some sort of idea of what we think is right. And we will, as long as we're broadly in that direction, then I'll take the criticism. And you know, anything that's different, you're going to get criticised. Websites get criticised.
Oh, no, completely. So it's not just the criticism piece. And, you know, we can't solve the troll problem, but it's more, how do you make sure that, you know, what you're putting out does connect with the AS Roma fans? Again, you don't care about the AC Milan. You don't care about anyone else. You don't care about, I describe it as your digital cheer squad. Like, for me, the community piece is, how do we get them interacting in a way that we'd like, but we're not controlling it. Like, it's a bit of, I think it was part of it, the community element was creating content that your fans want to share. That's the community aspect.
Yeah,
I think
that's social. Key. Like, I've got a 14-year-old daughter and her Instagram feed is the most highly curated Instagram feed ever, where it's all of her ages. Yep. They don't just post loads of stuff, but they're really protective of their brand. So if you think about every individual is their own brand themselves.
Yep.
And if you start looking at it from their side, you know, I read something in a book once or recently, and it basically said, think about your followers' followers. So, because basically you want your followers to share their content or share your content. And if they do, it's got to mean something to them. It's got to reflect well on them. So is this about being first? This is creative? This is funny? Because ultimately you're trying to help them build up their profile and increase their sort of, brand image or brand value.
Yeah, there's a graphic that I use in a lot of my keynotes about the different types of fans, and it's a different types of social fans, and some of them want to be the AS Roma reporter, cheer squad leader online.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, we know what you want. We've got to make sure we deliver content for you because we know that you share it with all your friends. Whereas your 14-year-old daughter wants a different piece of content. And so we need to make sure, and it doesn't have to be every piece of content has to be in that frame, but as long as we deliver that one piece of content for her to share or to give her permission to post, like, that's what you want to be able to do. So it is that, and again, one of the key points from your talk is like, know why you're posting something.
Yeah.
And like, what are you trying to get out of it?
We've got incredible people on followers out of our fan base. There's incredibly creative people. So there's one guy, a guy called Roma Rush.
Yep.
And he's brilliant at memes. He's so quick. He's clever. He's got a following of his own, you know, and one way of looking at it is, and sometimes it's a bit risque or sometimes it's like, it's not great on the club, but he's just a clever guy, you know, and very funny, and he's got his own following.
Yep.
You know, and instead of like putting it at arm's length, we
brought
engaged
him into the inner circle.
And like he helped us make stuff in the summer and helped us with like what we were doing, transfer videos. And there's other people who are brilliantly creative in terms of graphic design. There's guys, an article we had on our site today, which was breaking down the actual goal into this really detailed way of how the goal was played out tactically. And I couldn't write that, but this guy can.
And it's that next level of user-generated content, right?
Empowering fans. Empowering fans. Like, nothing's passive anymore. Well, very few people are passive. They want to be involved somehow, you know, and there's more of them than there's of us.
Yeah. And more and more fan bases have got more fans that are producers more than consumers. Especially this, 14 to 22-year-olds, they're producers, like they produce content all the time.
Yeah.
And so, there will be, I think, another phase of, do they end up working in the club, providing a different view, you know, becoming the Snapchat producers because or the Instagram story producers because it's a different look and feel. Yeah, like that's where there's an opportunity.
Different age group, different experience. Yeah. Like you, most, I don't know, lots of digital, well, football club, digital departments are staffed by, you know, we're set up with journalists.
Yeah.
And then we switched to video.
Yeah.
And we didn't make the decision to switch to video in terms of like that's just the way the world went. And then you found that you had like six writers or five writers and shit, it's a video world.
Yeah.
You know, or it's about graphic design. And I think I'm surprised more football clubs don't use the creativity of their fan bases. Obviously some do. I think there is a fine line and we're not in a great place. We need to sort this out. I think football clubs exploit fans. And I think there's a bit of an exploitation of creativity in some cases. You know, and I don't think that's technically good.
But it's not just a football, like we're seeing the changes in, you know, the traditional media space and we're seeing these new media players that are popping up out of these content producers. So, you know, guys like the Barstool Sports guys and that are doing their own shows or LaRue and Duncan and LaRue that do the NBA, you know, live Periscope, alternate commentary, like they're doing their own thing. They're finding it their own monetization platforms. And so, you know, again, the disruption, you know, if we're going to, like they're creating their own thing. And I think that's a potential that can potentially come into the fold or there's opportunities for teams like the media trying to figure out how that works.
Yeah, and I think those ones are set up in a better way. Like those companies have really done very well because they've tapped into a more authentic audience. They can say a lot more. I mean, I look at one of them, one of the highlights, House of Highlights, I think it is, on Instagram.
Yeah, the Bleacher Report guys, yeah.
But that was basically just stealing highlights.
Yeah.
And the guy was just, it was great. Yeah. And he stole these highlights and he built a brand and then he was brought into the fold there.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing story. And it also comes down to the way that the NBA treats its digital rights and the fact that it lets them run free.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't, you know, we haven't seen the House of Highlights happen in other sports because they've played the whack-a-mole game with the rights. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of the way the NBA goes about it because those things, you know, Vine was only powered by basketball highlights, you know. So I think that's a lesson to say, well, you know, there's whatever it is, 33 million or something people that watch that, and effectively it's what 20 years ago was SportsCenter.
Yep.
Right? And that's just how people get their highlights. So there's that piece where, you know, look at what's happening out there and, hey, what can we do, like, you know, from a club point of view, that there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, I also think like people within football clubs and media departments and stuff, they look at other football clubs, generally look at other football clubs and what they're doing and then they do similar.
Yep.
But ultimately, and you've got these guys, I don't know, 30 years of age or upwards, who are saying this is what the kids like on Instagram, so let's put emojis everywhere and stuff. And then you speak to like a kid and they're like, that's awful. That looks like it's done by one of our parents.
Yeah.
You know, so I think we have to keep bringing in young talent. And giving them because they're speaking to an audience, you know, and I think, and that's an authentic thing. And, you know, I think football clubs have been quite traditional, quite corporate in lots of cases, scared because the press will kill them on anything.
Yep.
You know, and we've seen this other sort of fan culture. Anfield Rap is one that's been set up for Liverpool and those guys are killing it, you know, and they've delivered a different service to what the football club is doing. Now, the football club might have come nearer to what they are doing now and there's a sort of balance, but, you know, if it's not authentic, then people just go elsewhere. It doesn't do its job.
So, I completely agree. So, what's your biggest challenge with AS Roma?
I think scaling in a... Basically, respecting tradition, respecting the history and sort of balancing the act of like, we still need to absolutely appeal to our hardcore fan base, you know, who are the most important fans, I would say. But we also need to grow and we also need to do new stuff that the way the internet and social media works, there's a different type of language that's used now. And you have traditionalists who are against that in some cases. And I just think you know, you can't appeal to everyone, so you have to do different stuff.
But that's also the brief. Like, you know, that's also the brief of you. We want to appeal to everyone. We want, you know, you've got this fan growth hat on, and the content that potentially appeals to that new market, whether it's a younger market or a international market, you're right, it sometimes completely riles up the traditional. It's like, we don't,
I think you can do that via platform. I think you can be a bit more specific with platform. So I remember when we were doing something slightly different on Instagram, which was potentially slightly younger or slightly, like, if you say Twitter's a news, I actually think Twitter's a news and almost media, like, funny. And also funny, and, like, I think there's
the
a lot
banter
of,
side, especially
yeah, there's a lot
football.
Of humour in it. And then Facebook's slightly different. You know, Facebook could be a bit more epic, for example, or YouTube.
And it's
going
to be interesting where their watch product and the video product goes. Like, the fact that Facebook sort of seems to be, you know, pulling a little bit away from live and moving into long form, which puts it right head-to-head with YouTube, because that's where people watch longer form. So it's going to be interesting to see how that, I guess, plays out.
Yeah, Facebook seemed to change it, you know, on a monthly basis of what their actual goal is. I think Facebook are going to have to, you know, Facebook don't need anyone else's advice on how to build a brilliant business. But, you know, they could easily start to, you know, push brands away from the platform.
But they are looking, like, their size, their magnitude, they are looking very much like traditional broadcasters, like going, well, we need to, you know, again, whatever the lads' changes are, I won't say anything because by the time we publish this, there'll be another change. But the fact that they're going, well, we want premium content. Sports is a premium content. That's what's driven TV deals and things like that over many, many years. There is a bit of that tension at the minute to go, well, hang on, we're, you know, our vision is ending up on that TV station because they're paying us money. Like, and if you want us to continue putting our premium content on your platform, yes, we know you've got our fans, but there needs to be that, well, where's, you know,
But you can't reach those fans unless you're paying. So if you're basically saying, Facebook is basically saying, pay us to reach your fans and then also give us your best content. You know,
Something has to break there.
They can't continue in that way. I think what could happen is that, you know, Facebook's the best targeted advertising platform in the history of the world. But does Facebook want it just to be an advertising platform for big brands? Because that might be what happens. You might decide to put your content elsewhere, but when you need to advertise, you'll advertise via Facebook.
Yeah,
you know, and
I think that's
different.
I think that's probably what's going to happen with a lot of brands, like, you know, banks and all of that. They can't put a lot of content on and get good reach. Football clubs can.
Yeah,
and there's a bit of Facebook needs football clubs and sports in general as much as the vice versa happens. So that's where I think there's going to be a thing. Looks like lunch is about to kick off. So here at Boss, I wanted to wrap up with a closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, I went to see Liverpool versus West Ham. I think it was 1980. I can't remember the exact date.
So you were like 7 or 8 or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a first time I've ever been in a football game, and that was an amazing experience.
And just locked in then as a Liverpool man for life?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I was before. My dad's from Liverpool. My dad's been a fan since, you know, the 50s or whatever. So, yeah, I was locked in.
I think I'm the same with Collingwood. There's kids now. I've seen kids at Collingwood games that don't have the name in the back. Just says no choice. You would have been a lot of sports events in your time. Is there a favourite food memory or a go-to food that you find yourself gravitating towards at a sports event?
I'm trying to think of when we used to go to all the Premier League clubs, you know, doing matches. I remember that it might have been West Brom or someone had brilliant, like, curry pies and, like, it was just fantastic food. But you used to judge all the football clubs by how good their food was. Yeah. and Chelsea used to be good. I think Man City was good. West Brom or someone like that. One of the Midlands clubs was good. And then you go to ones that were terrible and it would be like, that would be the talking point of Monday morning when you're back in the office.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
Twitter.
Just to see breaking news and what's happened and...
Yeah, it just makes me laugh. Twitter every day makes me laugh. And also news, purely for news.
Yep.
Trump, whatever.
Yep.
I would go to Twitter for news rather than go to the... And maybe the BBC website for news.
Is there someone that you follow, whether it's from a news point of view or an industry point of view, or someone you read or someone on Twitter that you follow that you would suggest that the podcast listeners give a follow to?
I need to think about that. I follow so many people and so many great, great people.
Is it, so then what is there a, like I've got a whole bunch of tools. I use Nuzzle and Refined, those kind of things. Is there something that you use in that space?
No, I get your emails and yeah. Obviously I follow you. So, I get lots of stuff. I just like to be bombarded with stuff and I save lots of stuff. I always send stuff to myself on it.
Yep.
From Twitter to email.
Yep.
And then I'm pretty bad on this, but then I'll print it out and I'll read it on trains and stuff like this. There's a girl actually I met in New York. She works for the New York Yankees, a girl called Jess. And she's always
War Eagle Jess. Yeah. She's had a few nominations and
she's always just posting. And she actually posted something today. I think it was a wrestling video or something, a hype video. And I always see her stuff and I send it to members of my team and say, oh, look at this video. She's worth following. And there's lots of, I follow so many people because I think so many people are really good in this space.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, you know, again, from those early days, like you can, like we have, make those connections with, because it's a real, like, as much as it's a relatively small world.
I got to chuck in two more people.
Go for it.
Christian at Bayern Munich in USA.
Yes.
And Ben, Bayern Munich in Germany.
Okay.
Both, they have a different outlook and I just love what they do. I think the German teams are really good as well on social media. And I just like their attitude. And it's not just about football, it's about culture.
Terrific. And I think the last one is, what, if you were able to pick an MVP, what social media platform would be your MVP? And again, you can answer it from your point of view and you can put your AS Roma hat on. If you want to do that as well,
Instagram does best for Roma.
Yep.
If we were look at pure numbers, I think.
But that whole engagement over the last 18 months has just gone bananas.
Yeah. Video views have overtaken Twitter for us on Instagram. But Twitter.
Yeah.
And also, even from Roma's perspective, there's a conversation. Like, I don't really see the conversation on Instagram, but there is so much engagement on Twitter and just like back and forth. And when you post something on Twitter, I like it when you see what the feedback's going to be, especially when we do weird things. Like weird things are in my favourite things. Like when you do something that's a bit nonsensical and you think and your heart's beating when you post it because you just know it could go terribly wrong. But I like that sort of stuff.
So to go in on that, because I've had the debate a few times with, you know, because the NBA, I think, do the NBA Twitter banter thing really well. I think it happens as well as, you know, in football. What are the checks and balances on those weird, quirky things for you guys at AS Roma? Is it you looking, like, is it one of your staff saying, oh, I've got this idea? Like, who signs it off? Like, you know, because the classic example is the Houston Rockets, Dallas Mavericks horsehead gun emoji tweet.
Okay, so I would say...
and we're keeping the recording, yep.
Okay, so I think a guiding principle we have is that we don't criticise other clubs.
Okay, yep.
We don't say anything that would mock another club. So we don't really get involved in that banter of... Because we can lose the next game.
Yep.
Like, we know Roma's a roller coaster. We can definitely lose the next game. We can look stupid. So we don't... I don't think we really gloat. We almost laugh at ourselves. And that's a sort of mindset. So I don't sign off everything because the team understands and the team comes up with funny stuff.
And
now, sometimes if it's slightly contentious or it could be about one of your players and you've got to balance that one, where, you know, would he understand it the wrong way or something?
Yeah.
But really, the mindset of the team is really everyone's aligned that, you know, we don't criticise other teams. We don't gloat. And also, we don't do anything that makes us, that reflects really badly as us on an image. But we will laugh at ourselves.
Yeah.
And we will say we're not as big or we're not as good as someone else.
So it is that, hey, let's do that inside joke that just us and our fans get.
Yeah.
And that. And so, again, if there's a process, is it just, you know, you've got something and do you, or one of your staff, do they just sort of flick it? Because I think that's where the, you know, the Houston one just went wrong. Like, there was, you know, they had the rope to be able to do all these things, but there just wasn't one checks and balance to say, I'm going to post this. Does that look good to you? Like, is it as simple as that? Or is it?
Sometimes, and something that I got that the other day, one of the guys in Rome actually sent me an email and said, we made this video, or me and this other lad have made this video, and we're going to post it if we win in the Champions League.
Yeah.
And he said, just have a look at it. And I looked at it and I was like, yeah, it's great. And I like the fact that, not that that was sent to me. I just like the fact that that's how people are thinking. Yeah. It's not
so
like
they're taking their own initiative.
Mindset's there. And I think it's tough. Sometimes it's tough because everyone wants to pull everyone down for everything, and the media will, you know, will exploit something. Oh, Roma have done this or whatever, you know, because there's nothing easier than writing about social media mistakes and stuff. I mean, the other thing is that in our team, we understand, you know, we've got to try not to make mistakes, but mistakes happen. Yeah. Like social media, I've said to people, you know, who don't work in social media when they've criticized someone who's made a mistake at some point, I said, hang on, we're on the line every day.
Yeah.
We're on the line every hour. We're making judgment calls very quickly, you know, so mistakes will happen and we never do anything intentionally to make a mistake. But, you know, if you sanitize it too much, then we may as well give up.
Yeah, and I think it was one of the your last key points. It's like, you know, the idea is you want to have fun. Don't take it too seriously. And I think that's a good way to finish off. Where can people find you on the internet? What's the best way to tweet or connect with you?
Twitter probably. So Paul Rogers, at Paul Rogers 73.
Yep.
It used to be at Paul Rogers LFC. I had to quickly change that when I left. So Twitter's probably the best place.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Good to catch up and pleasure to chat with you.
And thank you for having us on. I enjoyed it.
Download our Facebook campaigns guide at sportsgeekhq.com/FBcampaigns.
Thanks again to Paul Rogers. You can send him a tweet at Paul Rogers 73, as his Twitter handle is now since leaving Liverpool. If you want to ask him more about what he's doing at AS Roma or dive into the history of the internet and what he did at Liverpool FC. He's also in the Sports Biz Slack community. If you look up Paul Rogers, you'll find him. As always, as a Sports Geek podcast listener, you're more than welcome to join. Simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. As I said, really enjoyed both catching up with Paul and his keynote around stepping back from the content and really reviewing why we're doing this. And it is something that we do a lot of at Sports Geek in that review mode. And whether that review mode be reviewing the content at an end of season or mid-season, because again, we don't have to wait. It was one of Paul's points. You don't have to wait to the end of the season to decide whether a piece of content's working or not working. You sort of know really quickly. So we perform content reviews, working with the content team, diving in on what content they're producing, what audience is being engaged by that content. Do the fans actually like it? Should we keep doing a piece of content? Sometimes you have to stop doing a piece of content because it's not working. And then also we also do platform reviews. So looking at how and why we're using particular platforms, what type of content is working on those platforms, what audiences are being engaged with those platforms. So again, if it's something that you would like me to run my eyes over or catch up, it can happen in a workshop, it can happen via GoToMeeting. Those kind of things, please get in touch. And you can do so by sending me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or you can simply book in for a phone call. I'm happy to talk to anyone who listens to the podcast because I'm very grateful that you've taken the time to listen. So you can go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call to book in a time. More than happy to. Lastly, I just want to give a small plug to the fact that Comedy Festival is underway. The Melbourne International Comedy Festival has kicked off. It's currently underway. The School of Hard Knock Knocks shows will start this week. So if you would love to, I look forward to seeing people there. There's every chance by the time this podcast gets published that all the shows could be sold out. I know I am tapping a few people on the shoulder. So if you are heading to the Comedy Festival and you think about heading some shows, I'd love to see you come to mine. My School of Hard Knock Knock shows are on April 12 and April 15. So Thursday, April 12 and Sunday afternoon, April 15. To get tickets, just go to seancallinan.com/comedy. There'll be the links there to all the shows and check it out. If you're in town for the Comedy Festival, please reach out. I'd love to see you there. Or catch up. So that's it for this episode. Thanks again to my guest, Paul Rogers. Really thankful to be able to catch up with him while at Businesses Sports Summit. We'll leave it with the sounds of the game with some tremendous highlights and sounds of the game at an AS Roma game. So stay tuned for that. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.